Hello and welcome to Time with Pastor Otebel, our interactive discussion program that brings scripture to bear on the biggest issues of our lives. My name is Albert Okran, welcoming you on behalf of Dr. and Mrs. Otebel. Last week, we began a journey looking at the seasons of life. What an enthralling prospect we have ahead of us. Today, we push on from our foundational discussion, and it's my joy to welcome leading the discussion, Pastor Mensah Otebel. Doc, thank you so much for this particular series.
Well, it started well last week. God it will do well.
It did. There's a sense of timeliness about this particular series at this time.
I think so. Well, it's talking about seasons, so it has to be timely.
Looking forward to a great discussion today.
Amen.
Let me welcome my colleagues first, Pastor Eric Hemeku. Pastor Eric, good to see you.
Thank you very much, Reverend Albert.
And Pastor Priscilla Nananketia. Pastor Priscilla, good to see you.
Good to see you too, and thank you.
Wonderful. Doc, today we'll focus on seed time. And there's so much we would like to explore, starting from the origins. So the first scriptural mention of the word seed is in Genesis 1 verse 11. And I like the quote. It says, God created a herb that yields seed and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth. Very interesting write-up.
It is.
What is the meaning of whose seed is in itself? And what does it say about the universal principle of seed time?
The Genesis account, it's still in an agricultural language. And so it's talking about fruits. And the simple statement is that the fruit has the ability to reproduce, and its ability to reproduce is within itself. So if a fruit has to reproduce, it doesn't have to go outside of itself to find the power to produce and to reproduce. And it applies to fruits, but it's a general principle that what you need to produce and what you need to be great and what you need to be significant lies within you yourself, in a seed form, not in a fruit form. A fruit normally is the finished product, and the seed is the concept that produces the finished product. So God arranged our world to operate on that principle that there will always be a finished product. But if you want to be able to reproduce the finished product, the ability to do that is within the product itself. And you have to go within the product to learn how to make it work and how to make it function. So it applies to plants, but it applies to human beings. It applies to nations. It applies to churches. It applies to companies who want to achieve something and produce.
So, Doc, we intend in this series to ask you questions about seed time today, then push on to the waiting time, and then the harvest time. But help our viewers to understand why the seed time is so important.
The seed time is when you are nurturing the concept that will produce the fruit. And it could be a seed time in terms of finances where you are building on the investment that will yield the results. It could be the seed time for a pastor who is doing the work that will later produce the big church that he or she is looking for. It could be the same for everybody. So the seed time is when you are investing and you are nurturing what you've invested. It's a process. You don't just sow and reap. There is going to be a process. But it is that period when you are committing to making the right investment so that you can achieve the right fruits or the right results.
It would then be fair to say no seed, no fruit.
You may be given fruit as a gift, but if you want the gift to reproduce itself, then you have to discover the seed within it and plant it. So if somebody gives you the fruit, you eat it, and that's the end of it. So, you can have fruit without having sown a seed. But if you want reproduction, if you want to continue then you have to go beyond just eating the fruit that is given to you to discovering the seed that will help you to reproduce.
Thank you, Doc.
Doc, in the parable of the mustard seed in Matthew chapter 13, the mustard seed is described as the least amongst the seeds, but when it grows, it becomes a mighty tree with branches that give shelter to the birds. What do you say about the sheer potential or the multiplier effect of a tiny seed?
Well, in that parable, Jesus says that it's a seed that is taking. And that's a very important principle, because you can have a seed that is not taken. And to take it is to own it, to own the process that is necessary for you to produce the fruit. So in the parable, Jesus says, it's taking and it is sown in a field. And then he talks about how it produces fruit later on. So many, I would say probably almost in all cases, everything great starts tiny. Even we started very tiny in our mother's wombs as a seed. And then through the process of cell division and growth of the cell, we became fetuses, and then we became viable human beings in our mother's womb, and then we're born, and then we continue growing to where we are. So that is for human life. It is the same for everything we do, whether it's a company somebody starts. It starts as a seed, a thought, a concept, an idea that has to be taken. Because many times we have the ideas, but we let them go. We lose them, and we have the seed, but we don't take it. So it's important to seize the idea, to seize the concept, to seize the seed, and then make it produce.
Can we say this is an encouragement for people who begin very little?
I mean, quite a few people begin big. I'm sure if you are inheriting a very rich parent, you probably will begin big. But even that big you begin with is still a seed, because you're supposed to start from there and make it greater, as we have seen in families which have grown transgenerational wealth, that a father leaves something for the child, and the child comes and makes it greater, and then the next one comes to make it even greater. So their seed may not be a tiny seed, but probably in comparison to what they grow it to be, you say they started small, because for some people, one city is their small. For other people, a million cities is their small. Whatever it is, everybody starts small. Not the same kind of small for everybody, but everybody starts small, relatively speaking. Yes, it does.
So can a wrong seed or an evil seed also follow the same multiplication effect as it has happened in these cases?
Yes. I mean, the bad things that have happened in the world mostly have been because somebody had a bad idea and nurtured it and caused a lot of harm. I mean, you can easily think of people who have ruled nations or empires and have wrecked a lot of havoc and pain on human life, and most of them had an idea and worked it out. So it's a principle. You know, the particulars of the principle may be different. Ideally, the seed we have must be a good seed that we are using to bless the world. But people can also nurture, unfortunately, evil seed, because the Bible says whatsoever a man sows, whatsoever means it can be good or bad, you know, they will reap it. Sometimes you reap bad fruits from bad seed. But ideally, we are looking at positive things that people should do with the seed that God gives to them.
So, Doc, how do you change the trajectory in a family case where a seed had been sown before you were born and you discover it? How do you change that?
I think you are looking at where maybe a bad seed, so to speak, a bad example has been sown. I mean, you come from a line of extreme poverty, a line of illiteracy. Nobody gets educated in your family. So you find breaking out of that is difficult. First, you have to understand, as we said earlier in some of our series, you have to understand where you are. Because if you don't understand that what I am perpetuating is part of a bad example or a bad value or a bad behavior, bad attitude that has been part of my family's story, and this is how it works out, you have to understand that. No matter how much you love your family and appreciate and respect them, to just understand that there's some bad attitudes there. Because you can sometimes find a whole line of people who are just plain lazy and don't like hard work or complain too much or can't work with anybody and are too quarrelsome. So they can't work in any place, so they lose their jobs. And I mean, they may assign it to evil spirits, but it's just plain bad attitudes that probably had been ingrained there. So you have to just understand that. Then if you are a Christian, you have to trust the Lord to help you to be the beginning of a new generation. And throughout the Bible, we see that classically in the story of Abraham, he was the beginning of a new generation. So you can find something that has gone wrong for a long time, and one person comes and determines, I'm going to be the beginning of a new generation. I'm going to end the cycle in my family, in my descendants, whether it's poverty, whether it's illiteracy, whether it's all the bad things that happen, I am going to be the beginning of a new generation in my family. And I believe that in Christ, we have the ability, we have the power as new creation to start a new concept wherever we are.
Doc, let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 10. That says, now may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. I presume that he refers to God.
Yeah.
Is God the supplier of every seed?
No, God is not the supplier of every seed. I mean, if you take the classic case of Judas, a thought came into his mind to betray Jesus. And that wasn't from God. That was Satan's attempt to derail the ministry of the Lord Jesus Christ. And there are people who have had bad ideas, and we cannot say that it came from God. But God gives seed to the sower, not all seed to the sower, but he gives seed to the sower. So that means that God doesn't leave anyone empty. Every human being has an investment from God to do good and to make their life productive. Every human being, I mean, no matter how they look, how their body is structured, whether they have limbs or not limbs, whatever it is, once you come into this earth, God packages something within you that helps you to make your life productive. And that is why you can find sometimes people, unfortunately, born with very severe physical challenges. Some have no limbs. I mean, there is one particular gentleman with no limbs who's managed to build a life that employs people who have limbs. And where did he get the ability from? I mean, this is somebody you just look at and have pity on, which is also something very dangerous, because pity is a dangerous action shown you that will make you bury your seed. So instead of using what you have, pity can make you bury, hide your potential, because pity discourages you from self, you know, acting by yourself or taking charge of your life. And if there's anything we must always guard against, it's people showing us pity. People must be sympathetic and understanding, but not show pity. Pity says that you are not qualified to survive until somebody helps you to survive. That thought negates the seed that God has planted in all of us.
In that regard, is self-pity as destructive as the pity that others show?
Both. Because most times self-pity is a result of pity that is shown us. People make you feel that you are so miserable, your case is so bad, you're so unfortunate. And then you think yourself unfortunate and so bad. Once you get to that mode, every gift, every ability that God has given to you will lie undiscovered.
Doc, the idea that everyone has an investment from God is such a powerful truth.
It is what God gave to each one of us.
So is it the taking that you mentioned earlier, is that the missing link between that investment and the reality that God desires for us?
Yes, because the seed must be taken. The seed must be seized. And sometimes it's difficult. I mean, life can be very difficult for people because they can have very severe physical challenges. Some have severe limitations in their body. Some have severe limitations even in the way they think. And they were born that way. But that does not negate the fact that God, their creator, invested in them. And people must just accept that this is what it is. And actually, it is out of that that the excellence of God's greatness is seen. I mean, we all appreciate somebody we see with severe handicaps who overcomes them. We honor them far greater than those who had so much advantage and became great. I mean, it doesn't take much effort to do that. But when we see somebody who has come from severe handicap, I mean, when we watch the Paralympics and watch people, amputees, running with prosthesis, and we see people in wheelchair achieving something. I mean, we get awed by the extraordinary nature of God's gifting to humanity, that each one of us, no matter how disadvantaged we find ourselves, have an advantage living in us, and that is the seed God has given to us.
This is time with Pastor Otavo. We are coming to the place of learning that everyone has an investment from God in them. When we come back from this break, we'll find out how do we practically take that seed and ensure that nothing is missing and nothing is broken. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otavo, discussing today the seasons of life with a focus on seed time. Pastor Priscilla?
Doc, John chapter 12, verse 24 says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain." Can you explain this concept of the dying of the seed? In practical terms, what does it mean?
In context, Jesus was talking about himself as the grain of wheat, which must die so that others will be produced to become children of God, because he was the only begotten son and he had to die so that other children of God could be produced. So that was what he was alluding to or focusing on. But he used a principle that is universal. So he took a universal principle of how crops grew to apply to a spiritual principle of how he will lay down his life for us. So we can take how he applied it to his life and just look at the principle as it is. And the principle as it says that every seed has to go through a process to become fruitful. So the seed doesn't just become fruitful just as it is. It has to go through a process of dying. In the case of Jesus, that meant he would literally die. But it doesn't mean our seeds or our gifts or our talents and opportunities have to die, literally. But they would die metaphorically. They would die because you invest them into something. It's almost like if you want to make money. So you have small money. You want to save it in order to gain more money. Now, you cannot save the money today, withdraw it tomorrow. Save it today, withdraw it tomorrow. So you see the principle of a seed that is dying. It's not dying that you've lost it, but it's dying because you are not benefiting from it at a certain moment. And it's a principle of life that there are times when you don't benefit from your gift. The gift has to be trained. It has to go through a process of refinement. And at that time, you're not reaping results. And if you are a person who is instantly looking for success and you want instant success, you want to prosper, you want then you don't allow your gift to mature. You don't allow your investments to go through the process. You don't allow your training process to be complete. You graduate yourself quickly. And in the process, you lose the fruitfulness that should come out of that seed time when you are in a time not for reward, but for allowing the process to go on without deriving benefit from it.
So can we say that in the dying process, it calls for some form of sacrifice?
Yes, it does. I mean, for everybody, I mean, whether it's an athlete who is training and is building capacity, and nobody knows him. He doesn't get paid for it. He doesn't get rewarded for it. I mean, most people would tell you there was a period when they were going through extreme deprivation, whether in the form of hunger, in the lack of recognition, and all of that. But they were disciplined to stay the course until the time of fruitfulness. So the seed must die. And we must reckon it as dead whilst we wait for it to grow to become the fruit we are looking for.
Thank you.
All right. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 4, it says that he who observes the wind will not sow, he who regards the clouds will not reap. What do the winds and the clouds represent? And how do you overcome the forces that fight us from taking our seed and sowing it?
The winds and the clouds speak of adversity and uncertainty. If you just consider how difficult life is and how hard things are and how uncertain life can be, you may never plan anything long-term. And seed sowing is a long-term venture. You are committing to something to give you long-term value. And if you're just looking at how hard life is, you know, you wouldn't go through the process. I remember when I was in primary school, I had a classmate who was very fascinated with life. And, you know, he used to talk a lot about how he wanted to live life. And I remember when we got to middle school, he dropped out of school. I don't know his family circumstances, but he dropped out of school. And he became a driver's mate. He used to ply his vehicle in front of our school. And during break time, he would come by and shout. And we really thought he was a hero. We thought he had arrived, you know, because we are just about 12, 13, 14. And, you know, he used to come with the little money he had, you know, he would come and buy oranges. And we just admired that he had money on him. But I remember seeing him later in life. And his circumstances had not been good. And it just seemed like life had not treated him well. And I remembered when he started, when it seemed as if he had made it. He didn't have the discipline to go through education. school, at least finish primary school, middle school, go to technical school or vocational school, and build your life. But he jumped on something, and I'm sure he just jumped and jumped, and eventually nothing settled. So sometimes people don't go through the process because either life is so hard, we want to make it quickly. We feel that, you know, life is so hard, I need to make some money now because it's tough. But that decision will probably hurt you because it makes you abort the process for allowing the seed, your gift, your ability to properly be nurtured. So there has to be a sense of fortitude to just stand the hardships of life and allow a process to go through so that you can come out better with something that is beneficial to you and to the world.
Doc, let's stay with the central theme that everyone has something that God has given them, an investment in them. And let's find some practical expressions of this in our everyday life. So for many people, the seed in their hands may look small to them. How do you avoid despising or maltreating or overlooking the seed that God has given you?
It's something the Bible tells us not to do, not to despise the days of small beginnings, because everybody's beginning small. And we just have to have confidence that as little as our potential seems in our hands, it has the power to move mountains. It has the power to change destinies. It has the power to create an awesome reality for us in the future. We just have to trust it. The seed must be taken. You must take ownership of it, whether it is an education you are getting or a talent you have that you want to develop. You just have to believe in it. Or if you are a pastor, the calling on your life, that's your seed. That's God's gift to you. You have to believe in it, and you don't have to shortchange yourself. There will be people who will try to rush you into doing something that will not allow the seed to properly die and resurrect. And when they do that, they're going to shortchange you. So everybody has something, but we have to trust in it. It's our responsibility to trust in it.
Do you think comparison is another big force that makes people abandon their seed?
Yes, I think so. I think sometimes, you know, because our gifts mature differently. So, yes, there is seed time and harvest time, or our seed will produce fruit. But we don't all produce fruit at the same time. So you may have somebody who is your friend or your colleague who will come into their fruit earlier than yours is coming in. And when you see that, you may be tempted to abort yours, because then the competitive spirit trying to catch up, trying to be like other people, trying to dress like them, trying to wear what they have, gets to you. And I think it's one of the areas where a lot of people end up not going through the process suited for them to achieve the fruitfulness that they have to have.
Doc, you mentioned the talent. Let me just add in other natural abilities. If they qualify as a seed from God, what does the sowing process entail when it comes to talent and natural abilities? And what kind of harvest will it yield, you know, when you sow a seed talent, so to speak?
Well, everybody in life who has done something with their lives have done something because they had a talent for something. And they recognized it, that they had the talent for it. They took it. And probably they discovered it whilst they were in school and discovered over time that they have a certain, you know, attraction to a certain subject or a profession, and then consciously developed it. And sometimes it comes when you don't even consciously do it. I mean, it's almost as if time and opportunity comes your way, and then you just discover, wow, I didn't even know I could do this. But there will always come a point of recognition where you consciously take charge of what you're doing. So whether you're going to be a doctor or you're going to be a lawyer or you're going to be an engineer or you're going to be a musician or you're going to be a pastor, there will always come a moment when you take charge of it and you say, this is what I'm going to be. And then consciously work yourself through that. Now, working yourself through that is the time when you are investing your seed. In the classroom, you are investing your seed. Under mentors, you are investing your seed. Even in your work environment, as you start, you are working your seed. And sometimes a seed needs pressure for it to germinate. And so you may work under very, very difficult taskmasters who pressurize you. But in pressurizing you, they release what is in your seed. They release dimensions of capacity that you never thought you had. And sometimes the toughest people in our lives end up being the best gifts that God gave us to develop our talents.
Doc, I find a very interesting trend these days. You find somebody to pursue a certain profession, but later on in life, they'd start doing something completely different, which is a talent of theirs. They'll say, this is really my passion.
Because most people are multi-talented. So you can say they are multi-seeded. And sometimes it's easier to be a one-seed person than to be multi-seeded. Because when you're a one-seed person and all you can do is one thing, you focus on it. I mean, you have no choice, but because that's all you can do. But when you find you can do a lot, then you want to find out which one is really giving me fulfillment. So you can find somebody who is good as a doctor, brilliant in the science class, but he's also a good musician and plays music, and music gives him fulfillment. But so he's talented in medicine. And then he realizes he's a good artist. And then he realizes he's a good speaker. He's a good communicator. So you see multiple seeds forcing to be, it's almost like you are giving birth to quadruplets. You know, forcing themselves into manifestation in your life. Now, the difficulty is, how do you settle on one? Most times what people would do is one becomes the money-earning seed, and then the other becomes the emotional fulfillment seed. So one gives them money, the other doesn't give them money, but it gives them a sense of well-being when they do it. And so they probably do it as a hobby or something else to engage people. Danger, though, is when you interpret the emotional well-being to be your focus, because something that gives you emotional well-being may not give you financial security. So you may leave something that gives you financial security to something that gives you emotional well-being and then have financial challenges, because that seed, although it gives you fulfillment, doesn't give you the leverage that the probably what you developed as your profession gives you. But if somebody can transition mid-career into something that they have enough competence for, that's great. But it has to be managed well.
Right. So, Doc, how does one find faith and motivation to keep sowing against all odds, especially when the previous attempts have failed?
You have to believe in what you're doing. You have to believe in it. You have to believe that this is it. I mean, if you miss it and you think this is your seed and it's not, of course, it's going to create frustration for you. It's like somebody who thinks he's going to be a great musician and loves music, but has a horrible voice and even tonal judgment and all of that. You know, the pitch is wrong, everything is wrong, but they love music. Now, you can invest all you want into a bad talent. All you're going to get is frustration. So being able to rightly judge that this is what I have my strength in is a crucial part of what you do. So sometimes the frustration may not just be that the seed is just gestating, and it could simply be that you are just pursuing the wrong direction. And at a certain point, you just have to sit back and make an evaluation. And many times, you know, when you get feedback from people, they affirm what you have. You know, and unfortunately, sometimes people will praise you for the wrong thing. But if people give you right feedback, I mean, pretty soon you're going to know that, yeah, you don't have talent in that. You don't have what it takes to in that area, although you love it and you want to be great in it. You just don't have it. Like people who want to be great footballers, and everybody knows they are just average people who can kick a ball. But beyond that, they have no talent. They can never play for Manchester United. They can pray for it, fast for it, work hard, but they just eye to feet coordination, the movement of their feet, even the muscle triggers are not there for them to get to that exceptional stage. You can't do it. You just can't do it.
I love this. This is time with Pastor Otabo, breaking down the issue of seed time with very unique perspectives. When we come back from this break, let's find out about the environment, the timing. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otabo, discussing today's seed time under the broad subject of the seasons of time. Just a reminder to call somebody you love and care about to log on, tune in, WhatsApp them to be part of this all-important discussion. And the number on your screen is the number to use to send your questions for the attention of Pastor Otabo in subsequent editions. Doc, let's look at the environment. In the parable of the sower, the same sower, ostensibly the same seed, sown in different places with different results. What is the relevance or the importance of environment in this seed sowing process?
It's huge. I mean, just looking at the parable, the outcomes were dramatically different for the seeds. Some never got to start and others produced. So I think the environment is important, but the different environment, the internal environment and the external environment. The internal environment is your own attitude, or what we church people call the heart. It's what kind of heart you have, what kind of attitude you have, your mental orientation, your mental aptitude, how you process ideas, how you even see yourself and see people. These are all components of your heart, who you are. And your gift grows from within your heart. So if you have a heart problem, not a physical heart problem, but if you have this kind of aptitudinal and attitudinal challenge, and have developed either self-negating, self-defeating mindsets, then the seed, your gift, even germinating from within you becomes problematic. So that's the first issue of the environment. Then there's the external environment. Many times people focus more on the external environment. My view is, if the internal is right, you can defeat the external. But if the internal is not right, you can even be put in the best external environment and nothing good is going to come out of it. So the external environment would stretch to be your work environment, your family environment, and even into the national environment, the kind of nation you live in, the culture you live in, the mindsets that rule that environment, the culture, and all of that. All of that plays a role to your productivity. I mean, there are environments, external environments, that are talent enhancing, and then there are others that are talent destroying. So you find that the way the nation, the community is structured, it limits the extent of your productivity. So you will be productive, but it may limit the extent. My view is, no matter how stifling the external is, if your internal heart or environment is strong, and what is coming out of you is strong, you can defeat what is outside of you.
Dr. Mine goes to your message on onions, travelators, and Mark Zuckerberg that went viral across the globe. So from your experience of several decades in ministry, would you say that the internal environment is even more important than the external?
It is. It is. The internal environment gives you the strength to battle the external. But if internally you are weak, I mean, let's say that internally somebody is lazy, has just an obnoxious character, fights everybody, doesn't take correction, thinks he's the best thing that happened, disrespects everybody. So that's what you are. And you are extremely talented. So that internal attitude is going to place restrictions on you. Then you confront a society that is stifling talent and doesn't want people to rise up all of that. I mean, how are you going to survive? You are killing yourself inside and you're being killed from external. But if you have somebody with a can-do spirit and has a healthy sense of self-image and believing in his talent and ready to make the sacrifices and makes them, the external may resist him, but he would make a lot of progress. May not totally eradicate every problem, but cannot be stopped. Will make a lot of progress.
Beautiful.
Doc, how can we relate the lessons of the parable of the sower to a marriage or business going through seed time?
In the parable of the sower, we see more the environments as a dominant force to determine outcome. Because the sower is the same. The seed, you can't say is the same, but it's similar, almost the same kind of seed. But the environments are different. And Jesus explained the environment as the heart. And that's why I say there is always an internal and then the external. A business has the same. A business takes on the culture of its operators. So you can find over time that how they perceive things will be how they run what they do. And yes, it can also go through the same processes where it can be a self-sabotaging environment. You know, I've seen people who start very well and then sometimes come against tough environments and overcome them. And I've also seen people who come against tough environments and are not able to overcome. I think it's the internal fortitude that enables us to overcome. It's also just like preaching, like ministry. I mean, you can take two pastors and send them to a location. One goes to the area and says it's so hard. The people don't like church. They don't want to come and worship. You know, they're fighting their pastor. You know, and complain. And then you remove him and put another pastor there. Same place. The people haven't changed. Environment hasn't changed externally. But the new pastor goes, within 2 years, the church is growing and all of that. Souls are being won. So what has changed? It's not the external, it's the internal. One came packaged with a different attitude from the other one. And that's why when people spend time always criticizing the external difficulties they are facing, many times it is a sign that internally they don't have what it takes to overcome the external situation.
Would you comment on marriage?
On marriage?
Yes. This lesson, as it relates to marriage, briefly.
I think it does relate to marriage. I feel that when the marriage is strong on the inside, it the two people are strong, they're committed to each other, they can overcome whatever negativity is facing them.
Doc, Jeremiah felt very insecure when he was called by God and people like Gideon and Saul. How do we overcome the insecurities that often characterize the foundational seasons of our life?
I think everybody, apart from Jesus Christ, who was very sure of who he was from the beginning. I think every human being goes through insecurities. I mean, the Bible is a very interesting revelation of God to us, because the Bible paints the human condition so well. You would think that if the Bible is just to project people, then their weaknesses would not be seen. But right from the beginning, I mean, almost everybody God calls has insecurities, you know, and Abraham has insecurities. He's told he's going to give birth to a son. He's laughing. Moses is told he's going to set the people free. He says, I can't talk. And you look at all these people and they are battling the human condition. And all of us do. I have, from my beginning, I didn't think I would amount to much, you know, just battling all these thoughts about who you think you are. And everybody goes through that. But over time, as we become more confident in doing the little things we do, if anybody had told me I would be a preacher, I would never have thought, because I'm a very quiet person. Apart from when I'm preaching, I'm very quiet. And quiet people don't become public speakers. So how do you do it? You know, it's just doing a little, leading a small Bible study, and people say, oh, you led it very well, and doing something small. Then, you know, you begin to be self-aware and take your gift and realize, you know, God has given me something here. Let me grow it. So everybody deals with insecurities, and it's normal. But we have to overcome the insecurity by doing little things that affirm our gifting and assures us that we have something to offer to the world.
So the lesson here is that we must start very little.
Start little and build your confidence in a way that helps you to take on bigger tasks and bigger challenges.
But is it wrong when you are given a bigger challenge that you can say, for now, I can't do it, another season will come?
Yeah, it's iffy. You know, sometimes you learn to swim when you're thrown into the pool.
Okay.
So sometimes a challenge brings the best out of you, you know, especially when the challenge is external. I like it when there is an external challenge. Somebody says, you know, I believe in you. I think you have the ability, and gives you a challenge. Don't pass it up. Take it. You say, I haven't swum before. Who knows? You are the giant swimmer, but because you have never fallen into water. So that's where you emerge. I mean, but it becomes negative when we ourselves jump higher, and probably we want to go faster. We want to avoid certain steps in our growth. So we want to do things just for show off. Then it may cost you. But challenges are important. I mean,
we can't sign off on seed time without talking about those who consume their seed. In 1 Kings 17, verse 12, the widow of Zarephath said she had her last flour and oil, and she was going to consume it and die. But it was that same seed that God used through Elijah to bring her breakthrough. Can you speak to the issue of people who consume their seed either out of ignorance, desperation, or lack?
Well, I mean, that refers to people who expand their potential just on themselves, and sometimes on their own pride or their arrogance, self-gratification, So they never surrender the seed. I mean, the widow of Zarephath surrendered her seed. I mean, it's the same principle. The seed died and then it resurrected and took care of her for a very long time. So it's a principle, whether it's in agriculture, it's in business, whatever we do, you surrender what you have. You don't use it just to benefit yourself. You surrender it, let it work through the process, and then it becomes beneficial to you over time. So for everybody who is talented, don't go on ego trips with your talent, trying to prove something to yourself, to people. It may work for a while, but over time, you find your gifting will be deficient because you didn't allow it to go through the process.
Doug, the issues of surrender and process are issues we will explore in our next episode. But let me give the last question to Pastor Priscilla.
Doug, what about the elderly? Is it ever too late for somebody to sow a seed? I have Caleb in mind, who at the age of 80 was ready to fight for his promised inheritance. Can you give somebody an assurance?
Yeah, Caleb did it at 85.
But, 85.
You know, he had already been successful. So he didn't just come from nowhere. He had a good attitude. He and Joshua went to the promised land, and they were very courageous and wanted to take the land, although the nation didn't allow them. But that eagerness had never dissipated. So you just realize that his positive internal strength had been developed, and he didn't allow it to die so he could take on challenges. For people who have done nothing all their lives, it's difficult in your old age to do something. With God, all things are possible, so I'm not going to discourage anybody. But I'm just saying it's difficult when you spend 50, 60 years literally not taking up anything bold step, you haven't really focused properly, to think that at 60 you can really turn around and do something great. It's possible, because with God all things are possible. But it's also possible for people who have achieved for a while, maybe went into a quiet zone like Caleb, 40 years, and then they come and say, I'm ready to go again. And I believe such people, because the fundamentals are right in their heart, can do great things in their old age. Or people who did something in one field and later want to do something in another field. All of that is possible.
One thing is certain. This is a series that is really, really opening up life in a very special way. A big thank you to you, Dr. Otobo, for taking us on this wonderful journey. We really enjoyed it.
It's always an honor.
Thank you, Pastor Eric, for your contribution.
Thank you very much. Very instructive today.
Very, very. Pastor Priscilla?
Thank you so much. And thank you, Doc. It's
thank
always
you.
A learning time for me. Thank you.
Let's close out with the time in which we are. A time that some people describe as a time of famine. So Isaac sowed in Genesis 26, verse 12, in a time of supposed famine, and yielded a hundredfold result. Can this COVID-19 dispensation, pandemic, be a seed time for somebody? If we could close with that and with a prayer.
I think it should be a seed time for all of us. I personally believe I'm in a seed time season of my life, sowing seed and planting and investing and working hard and trusting God that I can put in effort, even at this time in my life. And in my ministry, to think that I can do new things, I can attempt new things. It's seed time. So for everybody who is being destabilized by COVID-19, we are in the best season of our lives. It's a time to do it again, to plant new seed, to start new ventures, to start new efforts, and just build up the courage to do it. And don't tell yourself, I'm too old. It's too late. I don't think I can do it. Everything is hard. It is because it is hard that we must break the ground. and sow seed. So I pray that God will give each one of us the strength, the ability, the capacity to break fallow grounds and to do great things. At this season of your life, you will enter the most fulfilling, the most fruitful season of your life. In Jesus' name, amen.